Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com, the independent voice of UNC Sports, brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com, the go-to provider for all your Tar Heel gear.
I'm your host, Tommy Ashley. You're listening to the Inside Carolina Day After podcast, sponsored by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. I've got Jason Staples and, of course, Buck Sanders with me. I'll go to Buck first, and we'll get right into it. Buck, I'm not sure. I've been watching Carolina football a long time. I'm not sure I've seen a more ridiculous ending to just a – I don't even know what to call it. That game was some parts great, some parts awful. College rules stink, but Carolina managed to lose a game that they had in the bag at least three times in overtime alone, Buck. What's your general observations?
Well, I don't know that I can add much to that, Tommy. I mean – it's just one of those losses that, you know, some losses you lose a game and, you know, it hurts, you know, you feel, you know, disappointed in the outcome. And then there's other games like this for a couple of reasons that make you just want to, you know, yank your television off the wall. Number one is Virginia Tech. And for those listening to this podcast that don't know, and if you don't know, you must have been living in Norway at the time. Virginia Tech was like the lead school that was banging the death penalty drum during UNC's NCAA troubles, which lasted a decade. And they did it with some success. You look at some of the players on their team, there's a lot, including the guy that started the game at quarterback, Hendon Hooker. North Carolina guys now, how many actual recruiting battles they won in that their determined effort to torpedo UNC football. I mean, that's up for the debate, but they gave it all they had. And so they rose up during that time period, and our diehard fans will know this, almost to a level of NC State-like hatred during that period of time. So losing to Virginia Tech, number one, is just something that is just sticks in the craw of every UNC football fan. And the fact that they managed to win some of these games that they should have lost. They should have lost last year to UNC, actually. But not being able to get over the hump against Virginia Tech is just so frustrating. Take that for number one. Number two, they're down this year. They're not the typical Virginia Tech team that you see year in and year out. They have personnel issues. They have quarterback issues. They have their defense is not at the level that they typically have. They don't have anybody on the defensive line that really scares you to death like they typically do. And even on the back end, you know, we were talking about this earlier, you and I and Jason, that they don't really have any of those fuller guys or, you know, players like that they typically have. So add all that up to, you know, North Carolina, you know, three times at least snatched defeat from the jaws of victory, and it's bitter. You know, I mean, I would advise anybody that, and this is shooting my own self in the foot here, stay away from the Tar Pit Premium message board for another 24 hours because it's brutal. And, you know, I get it. People get upset, and they have every right to be, and especially since in this particular game, North Carolina was their own worst enemy.
Yeah, we were watching the game as a family, and when Ruggles was lining up for that kick, I said, Lord, I hope his folks aren't on the message boards if he manages to miss this. And my kids were like, why? And I was like, you will soon one day understand when you get involved in message board communities or sports in general. And I wasn't wrong. It didn't take long for some folks on the boards to come through. Jason, I want to get into the nuts and bolts a little bit, but I'm trying to understand, and I want to get your thoughts on how this game ended. I mean, it reminds me of a great World Cup soccer game that comes down to penalty kicks. And it's not why Carolina lost. We've talked about that already in our short podcast, that they've had plenty of opportunities. But two-point conversions to end an epic college football game just seems – and when my son actually told me that's the new rule, if they ever get to five overtimes, I was like, that's not good with that quarterback for Virginia Tech. But what is – why? I get the safety, player safety issue. I guess that's the only reason. But why in the world would you make it about a 2-yard play, a 3-yard play at the end of a game like that? It just seems like a cheap way to end the game, no matter how it came out.
It's the NCAA. Is it really worth asking why? I mean, this is – you remember those old commercials, why ask why? This is really one of those moments where if you're trying to get rhyme or reason out of anything the NCAA does.
I had to unmute myself just so I could. He's right. You know, it's the NCAA.
I mean, you're going to get some of the stupidest decisions and ways of putting stuff together. It's the NCAA. I mean, have you watched how they do the whole targeting thing? I mean, and the way that is so unevenly enforced at that, I mean, it's the NCAA. I when it comes to that sort of thing, I've just stopped trying to figure out the why on that stuff. I do know that it's stupid. I mean, I've thought for a long time that we should go back to a certain point where, like, after, let's say, 3 overtimes, just call it a freaking tie. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the tie. At a certain point, the two teams are just their fight. You know what? Neither team deserves to lose that game at that point. And that's one of those things that's really, I think, one of the worst things about the kind of game we just saw is neither team really deserved to lose that game. And unfortunately, one of them did. And on one of those, I mean, it's basically like, all right, let's settle this by coin flips. Let's go ahead and get to the center of the field and let's just flip a coin and see which team goes home winner and which team goes home a loser, because we can't have a tie because that'd be un-American. You know, that's kind of how I feel about this. And again, it's the NCAA. And for some reason, we have an allergy to the long-standing tradition of ties. I mean, you go back years and years and years, and actually one of the great, I would say one of the great wins of the first Mac Brown era was a tie. You know, it's that felt like a win at the time. So, to me, there's something to doing it differently, but it's the NCAA. I don't expect them to ever do anything that's actually beneficial unless they're forced legally to do so. So next question.
Buck, let me go ahead and ask the question that is all over the message boards, and I violated my rule as well, but I said it at the end of the game, and I don't usually do this. I got two rules. I don't fuss about play calling, and I don't complain about the officials, but the play calling and the last drive of regulation and overtime was some serious what? In Mac's own words, if I read lips, what the hell was that?
You read lips well. That's exactly what he asked.
Buck, your thoughts. I mean, you said in your column it's not about play calling or something to that effect, but it might be in this one.
Well, you know, here's the thing, Tommy. And I bet I'll get an amen from Jason on this. Maybe I won't. But anytime you lose a game like this, I mean, without exception, the very first coach and staff member that goes under the bus is the offensive coordinator. It was the offensive coordinator's fault. And it is a rule that I have never seen broken. So, sure, you know, would I have liked to see something different? Sure. I'd have liked to seen actually what they did to have worked more, you know, and if it had, we wouldn't be talking about it. So, you know, those things you can quibble about and, you know, you can, you know, I recall like vividly, you know, back in the Butch Davis era when we would be watching that offense. And I bet I saw a million, if I saw one comment on the Tar Pit Premium message board that said, I can sit in the stands and tell you whether we're going to run or throw the ball and be right 100% of the time. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things where, you know, naturally the blame can be shifted or, you know, fixed at one point or another, but there are 100 things wrong that went wrong in this game for UNC. And if they'd have fixed any of them, they would have probably won. But some comments I've seen, and this is what cracks me up, is that North Carolina threw the ball too much. And I said in my column, that's like being mad at a snake when you pick the snake up off the ground and he bites you. I mean, Phil Longo is an air raid coach. What word in that phrase throws you for a loop? The air part, does that cause you any confusion? I mean, he's an air raid guy. He's going to throw the ball. So, you know, that kind of discussion is, you know, meaningless to me. And you know, people complaining about Javonte Williams not getting the ball enough. Michael Carter was just a better running back yesterday. That's why he got two more carries than Javonte Williams did. Williams, for whatever reason, I don't know if they had schemed him out in particular or were focused on him and didn't worry so much about Michael Carter. I don't know how that went down. But, you know, he had 11 carries. Michael Carter had 13. Williams had 38 yards. Michael Carter had 98. I mean, some of it is just, yeah, I don't know what to say about it, but being critical of Phil for throwing the ball too much, I mean, what do you expect him to do? He's an air raid coach. So, yeah, I would have liked to have seen maybe some different play calls. I would have liked to seen the play calls they made to have actually worked more. So that's where I'm at with the.
Let me take a short break, talk about Johnny T-Shirt. Of course, JohnnyT-Shirt.com and Johnny T-Shirt on Franklin Street sponsors for this podcast. Inside Carolina subscribers, of course, get that 10% off. But what do you get? You get anything and everything North Carolina sports. Basketball, football, baseball. Field hockey, tennis, anything. They've got whatever you want to cover your North Carolina needs. Johnny T-Shirt on Franklin Street, certainly great in-person customer service. They're alumni-owned and operated. They'll help you out, get whatever you want. Online, same customer service. You get the Johnny T-Shirt treatment. Go online, buy whatever you need. Shipping's great. Gets to your house on time. You got a Duke football game coming up. Which, by the way, we'll have another contest to win some tickets to see that one. But they will get you your gear before that game. Certainly any basketball needs you need. Basketball season, wow, is just, what, 2 weeks away, 3 weeks away?
Thank God.
So, JohnnyT-Shirt.com and Johnny T-Shirt on Franklin Street, visit them. Either way you visit them, you're going to have a great experience getting your Carolina gear. Jason, I am going to talk about play calling just a little bit more, and I'm going to talk about it in the vein of the two-point conversion thing. And you've been in practices You know, I'd like to think coaches probably rep 4 or 5 2-point conversions all year. And then you get into a situation where you've got to run 2-point conversions every play, which is another reason that NCAA is just stupid. But when they lined up for the one, the first one, I guess it was, I said, don't pitch it back to Michael Carter. They've seen that play before. And that's my uneducated look at the schemes and all that. And sure enough, and the cornerback for them, I think it was their corner, made a good play getting him on the ground. I'm not sure about the pursuit or whatever, but a lot of beef is coming at Longo for that, for running the same thing that he's already done once and did with success, at least against Miami and South Carolina. And then against Clemson, Clemson guys knew what was coming. It certainly looked like Virginia Tech knew what was coming on both of those plays. Like Buck said, it's great when they work, but it's a little tougher for them to work when the opposing defense knows what's coming. Your take on that portion of it before we move on?
Well, I'm going to take a minute before we, or actually probably 30 minutes, I don't know, before I get to that one. Going back to the play calling issue in general, because my overall view is that you can't really criticize the play calling, and you can't second guess play calling based on results unless you're first guessing going in on this is what they need to do. They shouldn't do this. And, you know, a lot of times we get stuck on the one. Well, you know, he shouldn't have called that. He should have called something else. Well, why? Well, it didn't work. Well, I mean, yeah, you should have called the touchdown play, I guess. You know, that is a lot of times how that knee-jerk reaction goes. That said, there are a couple situations where I thought the play calling was poor. I had the same reaction that Mac did on that final drive. Now, as far as I could tell, Longo, after all of that, shot back something like, well, you know, we're trying to win the drive or win the whole game. Cause I think he was concerned that in that situation, they were going to turn the ball over. And with what Virginia Tech was doing coverage wise and some other things, I think he was trying to protect Howell, but that I don't know if I read his lips correctly for that or not, but that last drive, I in regulation, I have less issue with, just because again, it's fairly low odds that you're going to go down the field and score there to begin with. But the place where I think I can definitely first guess, I had, you know, I'm sitting there watching and I'm making comments to myself as I watch, is on the two overtimes immediately after what I thought was a great play call on the run play to get 3rd and 7. Now you're down inside the red zone. And, you know, you got that eight yard carry from Williams when Virginia Tech was expecting them to throw it. It's a really good counter based on what Virginia Tech was in. And Williams was starting to heat up as a runner at that point. You could see he was starting to get stronger. And Virginia Tech was wearing down a little bit. And I, as soon as that play was done, I said to my, and I actually said this out loud, give it to him again. Because you just saw him go for 8. See if that hand's a little bit hot. Worst thing that happens is you get stopped. But if all of a sudden he's able to get 4, 5, 6 yards, all of a sudden your leverage is different. And I was starting to get worried because there were a few near misses that Howell had, and Virginia Tech was starting to zero in terms of pattern matching on what Carolina liked to do. And sure enough, that next throw was very nearly an interception. That was the one, that little out. That got undercut, and I'm thinking, man, don't risk it right now. Just hand that ball off. You're actually running it a little bit right now. See, I mean, take this and hand it to Javonte 3 times, even, or hand it to him on first down there after the 8 yard play, and I thought they'd have been better off. And I thought on the next drive, when they got inside the 15, once again, they immediately threw on 1st and 2nd down, despite the fact that they'd run the ball to get there. It's like, oh man, now that you got inside the 15, don't stop doing it. Just go ahead and keep doing what you're doing. So I did think that there was a little bit of a breakdown there. Just, I think they got a little bit too cute. I understand why they're doing it, because Virginia Tech is a tough defense. And once you get inside the 15, it's that much harder because the space is constricted and all that. And honestly, they did call on that smash route on the second of those two drives where I had some complaints. That first play call, even though I didn't like it, actually it should have scored. I mean, Howell missed the throw, but the corner route was wide open. He just missed the throw. It's not the easiest throw to make, and he just missed it. So could have had a touchdown there. So, I mean, that's a little bit of first guessing. And, you know, at that point where I thought I would have taken a little bit of a different approach, but you know, if one of them succeeds, it succeeds, you know, and then you don't have the same complaints. You go, no. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. That's fine. But when it comes to, the 2-point conversion, I agree with you. I thought they were, it's one of those things. I think they kind of used their best bullets early in the season on that, and they haven't added a couple of counters off of those same looks to give defenses false keys or whatever. I would have thought that they would have come in with a couple better 2-pointers customized for what Virginia Tech did, and they just didn't. And I thought the same thing as you when they lined up and they pitched that out to Carter. It was like, oh, that, why run that there? I mean, of all things, I mean, you've been running down here on the prior plays. You're giving yourself a better chance, but that's one of those, they better be in the right look, and you better do it exactly right. And when they've already seen this, they're less likely to be taken in by that. So why do that? So that was my reaction. You know, again, it's easy to second guess, but there was some degree of first guessing on this as well. So I think it's fair to criticize a little bit, even though I think the game was well called overall. I mean, there were some really, really good calls that led to some touchdowns, a couple easy touchdowns because of the right calls at the right time. And, you know, Virginia Tech is not a bad defense at this stage. They've gotten a lot better over the course of the season, which was what we talked about before this podcast. And so, you know, it could be better, but it usually could be. And I thought overall they did a pretty good job. It's just a couple situational ones that you wish you could have back. And I'm sure Longo and the staff are, you know, kicking themselves and wishing they'd gone with option B in a couple cases, but that's football.
It'd be interesting to be a fly on the wall in those coach meetings today, and be interesting to hear the press conferences on Monday from the coaches. Buck, I do want to talk about some positives on the offensive side. We'll move to the defense after the break. But, I mean, Daz Newsom was fantastic. But for one drop, I think Carl Tucker had that big drop in the ball game, which was not surprising to me that he didn't get another chance after that. But I thought Daz Newsom looked really good. Sam Howell, of course, sets the record for freshman quarterbacks. I mean, there was a lot of good on that side of the ball. That's sort of been forgotten, I think, a little bit with the way the game ended. But your take on just seeing Howell and Newsom become a thing, I mean, that's a good pairing, and North Carolina really takes advantage of those opportunities.
Daz Newsom is becoming a force now, and, you know, I think one of the things that Sam Howell, as well as he's played this year, has sort of lacked is having that one guy that is he trusts completely, a go-to guy that, yeah, I'm going to try to find Daz on this play, because if I throw it to him, I'm pretty sure he's going to catch it. And I think Daz has kind of evolved into that player so far, so that's all on the good side. The thing that, as far as, you know, this relates back to play calling a little bit, but you know, I thought Phil Longo had the exact right tempo against Clemson, designed for Clemson. And then I thought he had the exact right tempo, completely different tempo for Georgia Tech. And in this game, I couldn't really see that. I didn't see a real strategy for tempo. And obviously what they used did not really work because, you know, what you don't want to do is to leave your defense on the field way too long. And one way to modulate that is with tempo. And, you know, in this particular game, I did not think that tempo went wrong. I started out with a positive, and it did take me long to lapse into a negative. I apologize, but you were asking me about the positives, and I think the offensive line did okay. I didn't think they were as good in this game as they may have been in some others. And the big thing is, which usually should win the game, is the offense did not turn the ball over. And Virginia Tech turned it over twice. So B plus two in the turnover column and still lose the game, that's tough there. That's something that should not happen.
All right, I'm going to take a short break, come back. We're going to talk about the defensive side of the ball. I got a couple questions for Jason on that end. You're listening to the Inside Carolina podcast, the day after podcast, but let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, we're back. Jason, of course, you're listening to, again, the Inside Carolina Day After podcast. Jason Staples, Buck Sanders, and myself, Tommy Ashley. Jason, you know, quarterbacks with legs have given Carolina's defense problems. And I thought Hendon Hooker looked pretty good in his stint. When he gets hurt, my thought is Carolina's going to kick the hell out of Ryan Willis. And they did. But then Virginia Tech brings in Quincy Patterson, who is a beast of a player. I mean, physically, he's ridiculous. But a lot of people were upset that Carolina could not stop what they knew was coming. And I want to talk about that a little bit. But they also criticized, said he couldn't throw. I think he threw, what? I'm not sure. I'm not looking at stats. But every ball he threw, save maybe one, was on the money, especially the touchdown throw, the one-handed catch in the end zone, and then a couple other throws that may have been broken up. But your take on why Carolina struggled so much to stop basically the Wildcat there. I felt like I was watching Carolina and Baylor in 2015 there at times. I think it's a Jimmy and Joe issue. A lot of people are banging on Bateman's scheme on that. But from my perspective, it looked like Carolina just didn't have the horses, especially at linebacker. And I know Chaz Surratt had 17 tackles, but I did not see those gaps getting filled maybe like they should to stop that sort of offense from Virginia Tech. Tell me why I'm either right or wrong.
No, you're right. I mean, the biggest place where it was a problem is in that stretch that where Strobridge went out. There were a couple drives there late in the game, and one of them was the drive where Patterson had that long run where Strobridge got banged up and was out, and when he was not on the field, they had no shot. And then even later, you know, when he came back on the field, they started stiffening up again. But he still, I mean, there's a certain point where Strobridge and Crawford are gonna start wearing down after four or five overtimes. And then you've gotta have other guys that can step in and do that. And they just don't. And so it's not just linebackers. I mean, yeah, you know, they had some issues where you've got to have somebody from the second level that fills a little better here or there. But some of it is just that you got the defensive lineman responsible for a gap that gets blocked out just a slight bit too much. And you've got a backer trying to respond to make sure that guy's right to get into that gap. And he's just a little late, and you got a 250 pound quarterback, you know? So the personnel situation, I mean, they are MacGyvering this on the defensive staff. We've been talking about this for weeks now, that the issue is that defensively they're having to make it work with bubble gum and duct tape. And, you know, at a certain point, your lack of personnel does get exposed. And the biggest problem is that they just don't have the personnel in the secondary right now to be able to do some of the things to compensate for what they don't have up front. I mean, that's the catch 22 that they've got. I mean, with Morrison out, with Patrice Rene out, with Wolfolk out, with all those guys on the sideline, well, now your weakness has been up front. Then you could kind of depend on being able to say, well, at least that guy, we're gonna take our chances with this guy covering this guy, because we got to be able to stop the run. We got to be able to focus on handling some of the weakness up here. Well, at least when you're doing that, you can compensate for the weakness that you've got with a strength. But with all those guys on the sideline, now you don't have the strength to compensate for that weakness. And, you know, actually, Greg Ross played a pretty good football game. But the problem is that Virginia Tech has a really good group of wide receivers. I mean, again, we've talked about this for a couple of weeks on this podcast, circling this game as a, man, if they survive that game, it's, you know, it's going to be tough, because Virginia Tech's got some receivers that are going to give that secondary, that banged up secondary, problems. And they did. And if it weren't for a couple of those big plays made by those receivers, I mean, I'm thinking especially of that fourth down touchdown in the overtime, which is a ballsy call. But you can do that when you feel like your guy is just that good and their corner can't quite stick with him. Well, that's the situation. And, you know, you can say all you want about, oh, they never threw with Patterson. He threw a dime there. And when push came to shove, he made a couple throws that made sure that they were able to win the football game. So that now you have to honor that. And that's what allows them to then go back and run them again. But once Strobridge came back on the field, they struggled to run him with consistency. I mean, they got stops. They forced field goals in those overtimes because they were able to stop the run, limit the run. They were able to force them. You know, he didn't just get 5 yards at a time. But eventually, late, you could start to see them starting to fray a little bit by about the fourth or fifth overtime, where they were just running out of gas. And then by that two-point conversion, they just didn't have anything left. I mean, you could see that was a gassed defensive line, defensive front in general. And at some point, that guy's going to get 3 yards. I mean, it's just if you do enough 2-point conversions that way, you're going to get 3 yards when that guy, there's going to be a little enough of a crease, and he's a big boy. So, you know, it's, I thought actually defensively they called a good game. I thought overall they played pretty well as a defense, but they played against a team with some really good wide receivers that matched up. They played against a team that matched up with their weaknesses really well. And we talked about that going in, that was a concern. So that's not a surprise. It's unfortunate. And it you know, sucked to watch, but it's not a surprise. I thought they did what they could do, and eventually they just didn't make the plays that they needed to make, particularly on offense. There were a couple plays that were just left out there that cost them the game, offense and special teams.
Yeah, Jason, I wanted to follow up with you because in my column today, I was really speculating more than making an observation, but it seemed to me that against Georgia Tech and against Virginia Tech, we haven't seen the same sort of mad scientist that we had previously seen from Jay Bateman in some other games, like some of the stuff that you document so well with your video analysis at Inside Carolina. And I was wondering if that observation is correct, and is it because if you're constantly trying to protect a corner by giving him, you know, safety help all the time, and you've got guys in the game that have not had a tremendous amount of snaps in a lot of cases this year, and who weren't your first choice to be on the field, does that limit what Bateman can do in terms of some of the stuff that he likes to do in terms of safety blitzes and whatnot, because of that factor, it doesn't just affect what happens in the secondary in terms of whether the receiver catches the ball or not, or whether, you know, they've got good coverage on him, but it also affects what happens up in front of him, what the kinds of things that Bateman can do. I don't know if that's a correct observation or not, but it's something I was speculating about this morning.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some truth to that, that you, when you have a full cupboard on defense, the whole panoply of gadgets that you want to throw in there is available to you, because you can isolate this guy and say he's going to win his matchup, and now I can take advantage of this. When you can't isolate that guy, then you're limited in what other things you can do, because, well, I know that if I do this and then, you know, try to get my advantage by taking a little, because that's defense, right? You have to take a little bit from Peter to pay Paul, at, you know, Paul, as they would say in the SEC. But that's what you have to do, is you're always saying, okay, I can have this guy over here helping with this, or I can have him over here helping with, but I can't do both. You've got to make your decisions. And so much of defensive football is learning how to make it look like you're doing one thing and then doing another, and how to make sure that you're anticipating that they're going to do this thing. So I need to make sure that my extra support's here, learning that how to support who can do what, so that you can support those things. Well, the problem is when you start getting more and more weaknesses that add up, you end up just, you can't take any money from Peter, because Peter's bankrupt, and you got, and Paul's already poor. So you got some problems. So to some extent, there's that you have to, when you're trying to protect your defense in certain ways, you're limited on what you can do. On the flip side, I thought there was more sophistication defensively than might be appreciated. I mean, they did a lot, but things get simpler for an offense when they're able to just bludgeon you in the running game with a big quarterback. I mean, that does simplify things, and it forces you defensively to basically commit to stopping that. So, you know, I thought they I thought it was a typical Jay Bateman coached game. I don't think it was any different really than from what they've done. You weren't seeing as much in the way of safety blitzes or some of that stuff, but it was what he does. And, you know, at a certain point, the problem is just you don't have a whole lot of options that on the table that look like real good ones. I've been in games where you look down at that play sheet and you're like, nope, 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 nope. Oh, dang. We don't have anything on this sheet that's going to work. And that's a bad feeling. And I don't think they were there, but it was much more of a situation where they're calling, okay, we got to run this, but man, we got to execute it. They're going to be able to throw it over top of us. And there were a lot of those situations in this game where the duct tape is fraying a little bit.
Football seasons are long, bye weeks. I think a lot of people expected the bye week to cure all ills. It just doesn't work that way. And Virginia Tech took advantage. I think, Jason, your point about their strengths matched up with Carolina's weaknesses was on point. And games are all about matchups, and it was not a very good one for Carolina. That being said, Carolina had at least three, four chances to just win and couldn't get it done. Buck, I'm going to let you close it. Carolina looks ahead to Duke. And, of course, while I'm thinking about Duke, let me tell Inside Carolina Premium subscribers, you've got a ticket giveaway, another home game. It seems like it's been forever. But I need you to go on the message board and click on the thread about the ticket giveaway and enter the code 1888. It's the first year Carolina and Duke played in football. Enter the code in the ticket giveaway thread, not in the podcast thread. You won't be entered if you're on the podcast thread. And if you win the tickets, you get a chance to sit with me. And who knows who else is sitting with us. My children aren't going, so it might get rowdy up there or not. Carolina and Duke, enter the code 1988. Back to the question, Buck. Where does Carolina go from here? A lot of people think this is a backbreaker. This is devastating. I just tweeted out something as Jason was talking that I thought about. Butch Davis went 4-8 his first year at Carolina, and I want to say 6 or 7 of those games were 7-point games, including at least 2, maybe 3, that it was how in the world did they blow that game and not win that game? They go 4-8. I don't remember. Maybe the internet was around, but not as intense, or the negative voices weren't as loud. I don't remember the angst at that point, because everybody knew with recruiting and Butch Davis and all this, that everything was going to be okay eventually. And it was just a building block season. I'm not sure why folks, or some folks, are losing that faith in this season, because realistically, no matter how they've gotten there, they're still trending towards what everybody said this season would be, somewhere between 5-7 and 7-5. But, Buck, in your opinion, why does it feel different, at least coming from the hardcore fan base?
If you had checked within the first 48 hours of some of those losses back during the Butch Davis era, you would have probably found something extremely similar to what we're seeing now. Now, there are some differences. One, our message board is bigger now than it was then, but more people on it and more voices to be heard. And I do think that a lot of that angst will dissipate a little bit during the week. There will, you know, more voices will join into the sort of, come on guys, let's back off the hemlock here and not do ourselves in, you know, before the years out. And let's just talk for a second about who is it, what person on universe, in this universe, can accurately forecast anything that's going to happen from this point forward. I mean, you look at yesterday, Miami last seen beating the heck out of Virginia, or beating them, loses to Georgia Tech. And who saw that one coming? Duke, who, was also a Coastal Division contender and still are at 2-2, got boat raced by Virginia yesterday.
That one
last
was shocking.
Seen losing to Miami. Virginia's last seen getting smacked over the head by Miami. And then you got Wake Forest in a game nearly as strange or more so than the one we witnessed. Knocks
I'm
off
cursed,
Florida
man.
State. yeah, I feel bad for Jason. Louisville, last seen, scoring 62 on Wake Forest, scores 10 on Clemson. Go ahead, Jason.
And also, Duke beat Virginia Tech in Blacksburg by forever. I mean, I saw the circle of suck in the Coastal Division is complete, and it's just mid-October. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, anybody
you'll have to edit this up, Tommy.
No, we'll leave it because it is fitting for a coastal discussion.
Yeah, well, it's a little chaos going on. But if you think about it, who is it that can actually get within, you know, the Atlantic Ocean of predictions, you know, next weekend? Who's to say that North Carolina won't win out or lose out? You know, I mean, anything can freaking happen. And if you think you know, you don't know. This game, yes, painful, one that North Carolina should have won. But predicting the Coastal, I mean, Virginia looked like world beaters yesterday, and nobody the weekend before. Georgia Tech beating Miami? Come on, man. I mean, who could see that coming? So, anyway, I just thought I would add that in terms of what's next for UNC. Nobody knows what's next for UNC or Virginia or Duke or Miami or anybody in the Coastal. So just want to throw that out there.
Jason, get it out. I know you had something to say. I'm not totally calling the Jason Staples curse, but you've had an interesting pairing over the last 3 years.
I'm sorry to the North Carolina fan base because I've clearly brought this suck upon us. I mean, this, if you look at, I'm the common link between these two programs, and man, have they tracked each other in so many, I mean, the strangest thing. I mean, how many teams this week at any level do you think iced their own kicker?
I know two.
And it happens to be the two that I cover.
I think it's probably two is the correct answer on how many.
So, I mean, at a certain point, you start going, well, okay, well, what are the common things? You know what the common things are? It's me.
All right, we got to figure this out. We will figure it out over the course of the week.
We need some grain offerings, or, I mean, anybody know what the football gods prefer on this? Because we got to get this demon exercised, you know?
We need to smoke some sage over our computers or something. Do something. Well,
no, the
problem. Sage.
No, the problem is that the Fedora staff didn't even recruit sage. Or otherwise, we'd probably be in a better spot.
Yeah, both. Yeah, those
well,
games
they probably. Yeah.
Fun stuff.
Yeah,
boys.
I'm done. I'm done talking now.
Okay, I'm going to wrap it. Again, enter the code 1888 on the ticket giveaway to have a chance to win two tickets courtesy of Inside Carolina and Buck Sanders. I'm getting out of here. I'm turning it off before my computer goes black. Jason Staples, it's been fun. Buck Sanders, it's always been fun. Appreciate everybody listening to the Day After podcast. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
And the fact that we managed to laugh a little bit today is spectacular, don't you think?
Oh, Lord.
Yes, the alternative is much worse, and it's too early for that. All right, boys, we'll talk again soon.
Later.
Thanks for listening to another podcast from InsideCarolina.com. Brought to you by JohnnyT-Shirt.com. Where to go for your next Tar Heel gear purchase.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.